This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
Yeah, you can hear it now, can't you?
I can hear it in my ears.
You can hear it. Can you hear it? Are you loud enough?
I think I'm loud.
You're not loud enough. Keep talking.
Hello. Am I loud enough now?
I never know which one it is.
Loud enough
which
now?
One is it? Which one is his knob?
Yes.
That one. Keep talking.
Hello. Oh, I'm loud now, aren't I?
Oh, yeah, but you're loud in your own ears. I want him loud in my ears. Keep talking.
Oof.
What? This is not a beginning of a show.
It is actually.
Well, you're listening to Fan Club. Can you just get in here and sort it? Because I can't do it and host a show. co-host a show. My name is Nick Helm.
And my name is Nathaniel Metcalf.
And you're listening to very poorly Fan Club.
I think we're both poorly. Everyone's poorly.
I can't hear him. Have you turned him up?
He's out full.
To communicate with me. I'm really loud in my ears. And normally that wouldn't be a problem, but today...
Hello, am I good? Can you hear me?
You're listening to Five Star Fan Club. if you've got any nice things to say about... Anyway, so my name's Nick Helmer, this is Nathaniel Metcalf, and you're...
Hello.
Fuck it, hang on.
Nick and Nat's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
I'm ill, Nat's ill, Natalie is ill. Our guest coming on today has just emailed to say that he's not feeling very well, and he may be a Fan Club first, sick on air. So we're looking forward to that.
Looking forward to that. Never had before.
The first rule of Fan Club is...
Tell
your friends about Fan Club. Second rule of Fan Club is, please, for the love of God, tell your friends. And I haven't actually talked to Nat about this, but what I was thinking was... I was listening to the show, and although we don't ask, I mean, it would be begging, you know, if people want to go on iTunes and give us a five-star review, sure, go for it, guys, go for it. And do you know what? If your review cuts the muster, cuts the muster or cuts the mustard?
Cuts the mustard, is it?
Cuts the muster, cuts the muster or cuts the
muster.
Mustard? Cuts the mustard. If your... Cuts the muster? Cuts the mustard. Cuts the muster? If your review cuts the mustard, what the fuck does that mean?
I don't know. Sounds like someone's farted. Might be someone that said, "Oh, who's got the mustard?"
If your review cuts the mustard, it's like mustard. Mustard cuts the mustard. Yeah, but every time I touch the screen, it goes. Oh, this is not a good start to a show, Natalie. I mean, you had a guy that came in the other week and he went around underneath all the desks and I turned into my new character there. He went over all of the desks, didn't he?
Previewing one of your new characters coming up later.
Previewing one of my new characters. One of Nick's new... He's not a character, he's a guest. He's a guest man.
Guest man.
Oh, I'm feeling sort of man in the street. And he was walking past a rose bush, and I thought, I'll have him. So I went down and I jabbed him with my tail, and when I flew off, my spike came out. My tail came out, and it pulled out all my guts through my ass.
That's and a clue.
I'm feeling very tired, and I don't think I'll be able to make the concert tonight. Yeah. My name is Stung. Oh, Stung. Stung there, lead singer of the Bees. Like the Police, anyway, the B version.
The
Bees. Honey in a bottle, man.
Nice.
Anyway, Stung came along and, he did the old title track for Ridley Scott's new movie, and then he came over. So Natalie, what happened was, keep your fan art coming in. So so a guy came over and he unplugged all of the monitors, didn't he? And he blew on all the plug sockets like an old 16 or 8-bit cartridge, and and he just plugged it all back together again. And now all of the screens come on and off whenever anything happens, whenever you breathe on it.
Not for you, actually, or anything.
But at the top of the screen, you're saying that you've cut the mustard, come up to expectations, reach the required standard. I guess in the olden days, mustard had to have a very high standard because they used to put it on the old ships, and it would cover over the flavour of slightly off mutton. Cut the mutton.
Is that right?
Is it cut the mutton? No, it's cut
mustard seed, which is hard to cut with a knife on account of it being small and shiny.
All right. Why cutting mustard has chosen as an example of high quality is unclear. There are no shortage of guesses. Mustard seed, which is... Oh, you've done that one. Mustard plants, which are tough and stringy and grow densely. Culinary mustard, which is cut, diluted, and made more palatable by the addition of vinegar.
Dried mustard paste, which was used
to coat meat and then
dried to form a cut.
No, it will be culinary mustard, like cutting heroin, which is cut, diluted, and made more palatable. But do you cut the mustard? Have you made the mustard the finest mustard it could possibly be? Have you cut it with vinegar? And yes.
And if you do that, we'd read out your...
We've cut it with piss and vinegar to the very highest standards of our abilities, which is fairly low, but still, nevertheless, 5 stars. So, we're not asking you to write in high review. I do find it funny.
The tangents?
No, not the tangents. Just how... just how there's not been one quality thing that's happened in the last 6 minutes. Oh no, Stung came in, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. I tell you what we could talk about. Stung.
Well, I did have a point.
Okay.
Yeah, go on.
No, go on, do your point.
I was just thinking that maybe like a weekly thing that we could do, just like as we build the show, is that I always ask Nat what he's been a fan of this week. I don't always, but I try to remember. And he always asks me what I've been a fan of this week. But maybe what a good thing would be is rather than you just write in and sing our praises, which... obviously, we deserve. Maybe you just write in and tell us what you've been a fan of this week, the listener.
Yeah.
And we can read out some of the more interesting picks every week. And maybe me and Nat will learn a thing or two off you. Because really, the whole point of the show isn't that we know loads of stuff. It just so happens that we talk extensively about stuff that we know about. But one of the things about having Elliot on last week was the fact that I know fuck all about a lot of things.
Sure.
Well, don't be so eager to agree with me, Matt.
I mean, as a collective, we.
Yeah, and I think one of the nice things about doing this, and one of the nice things about fandom in general, is that it can, in the Venn diagram of things that we're interested in, there are crossovers all the time of stuff that you don't know about. And, I'd like to learn more. Every week, if you just tell us what you've been a fan of, and then we'll go away and we'll... We'll either listen to whatever you suggested or read up on it or whatever. We might not. It might just be absolute gash. But, or cock. But I don't know what the preferred term is. I've just been looking at these tissues. I'm holding them up to the camera. Not that we'll use this bit. But it does very much look like there's 3 chilies on there that says they're the hottest tissues that you can use. They're actually just arrows pointing on how to open the tissues, which fucking hell, if you need that. Then just use toilet paper. So write in every week, tell us what you're a fan of, and we'll try and expand our knowledge on things in the world. And then maybe at the end of the year we can have a quiz. Where's the fucking quiz cards? You haven't set this show up at all this week. We were early as well. Unbelievable. Oh, the screen's gone out! All right then, Nat. But you're not going to fix it during a song. It's been like this for 4 weeks. If you were going to fix it, it would have happened by now. I can't believe that we're the only hosts of any of the shows here that has actually made a formal complaint about it on the air. Have other people complained? Yeah, everyone's complained. You're not going to fix it during a fucking song. Actually, my song's 5:06 this week, so maybe you can. So, I love you, Natalie. Oh, God.
Well, we have got that. You've got your Levi Roots Caribbean Crush.
I did. Do you know why? I went over the... I swear that shop over the road it's a shop front for a drugs den.
Yeah. Well, it just runs out of stock and they never get replaced.
They never get replaced. Listen, I bought some candy sticks for our guest today, 35p. And this is, the candy sticks that are like, they're the gateway candy for young smokers.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, right. So...
only about four, isn't it?
It's just dust and chalk. It's sad.
Also, I think those candy sticks. What's the sell-by date on those candy sticks?
Oh, do you think they're gone? Oh, what's the sell-by date? Best before end.
Well,
all right, mate. Fucking hell.
Oh, lovely.
That's Caribbean Crush. Oh, if Ian, you could smell what I could smell. That's Caribbean Crush.
The taste of the Caribbean.
Oh, it's absolutely disgusting if you brush your teeth. So every time you go in there, and it's just like this, you buy something, and the next week you go in, there's just one less thing in there.
Yeah. Eventually they'll run out.
I thought definitely, I haven't been in there in about, 4 months? I thought they'll definitely have replaced the Pepsi Max cherry. Sure. Nothing.
Just an empty hole where the Pepsi Max cherry is.
They're just, if anything, they've stopped selling Pepsi. Products.
It's like they've gone, oh, do you know what? This is a terrible idea. Because we open this shop, it's all been going well, but people keep buying stuff, and, it's a very finite business.
What's the point in buying more? We're just going to run out again.
Yeah. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. He's having a breakdown, poor thing. River the road.
Poor hen. That is... What's that? That's green tea, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
That's not ginger. That tastes like green tea. I'm allergic to green tea. It makes my thyroid gland expand.
Oh, does it?
Oh, it rhymes. Which is the only good thing about that. Everything else is a pain in the neck.
Oh.
I don't think that is where your thyroid is it?
I don't know. I don't understand geography of the body.
And speaking of geography of the body, we're going right into the anus this week.
This week, the anus.
Okay, I'm going to ask you one... we've had that one. I'm going to ask you one quick question and then we'll get into it.
Is it into the anus?
Who plays Deadshot, in the 2016 movie Suicide Squad?
2016? I thought it was 2015.
No.
I don't think we've had gone as far as that before.
2016.
Oof.
Oh, I thought it was right. Oh, but it might have been predicting the future.
I guess they would have known by then, wouldn't they?
Well, no, not really, because they could have cut him out, like, so much of the plot.
Mm-hmm. Will Smith.
It was Will Smith. So what have you been a fan of this week, Nat?
Well, what have I been a fan of? I watched... I didn't watch that, did I? What did I watch? Hang on.
We're both really ill.
Hang on. I did make a little note.
What have you been doing? I mean, I'm ill, what I do is get home as soon as possible and I get into bed and then I just veg out.
I think I'm ill as of this morning, though. I think this is a new thing. What I was going to talk to you about, though, was when you were talking about
being
stunt.
On so many cold and flu pills, extra strength.
Thyroid is a butterfly-shaped gland.
Come on.
That sits low in the front of the neck, so it probably would be a pain in the neck.
Yeah. What have you been a fan of this week?
We were talking about Stung earlier, Stung and Shaggy, and I was thinking...
Stung and Shagged.
The end of the era of people doing songs for movies. It seems to be over, right? And you think of Stung, Bryan Adams... And who was the other one?
Rod Stewart.
Rod
Steiger.
Who did?
Ryan Adams and Stung. All for one.
All for one from the Three Musketeers from the 1990s.
One for all and all for love. That's what it's called.
1993? Four?
It was sort of a sequel. I think it was 90. Oh, Jesus. Was it 93? It was sort of a sequel to Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Mm. It was like in everything that it was just like Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves was Morgan Creek and Warner Brothers, and Three Musketeers was
Disney. Isn't it?
And it was kind of like, right, well, we'll get the cast, we'll get a young cast. It was basically Christian Slater from Young Guns 2 was in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. And then they got sort of like Kiefer Sutherland from Young Guns 2 to be in it. And it's sort of like, it was the Brat Pack version of the Three Musketeers. So who was it? It was Oliver Platt, obviously Oliver Platt. Teenager Oliver Platt, playing Porthos.
Yes, Porthos.
Then it was Kiefer Sutherland playing Aramis, was it? The romantic one, yeah. The troubled romantic lead. And then Charlie Sheen playing Porthos, Athos, Aramis.
Athos. Yeah.
Aramis. No, I think Charlie Sheen was Aramis, the romantic one. Oliver Platt was the Oliver Reed substitute, and then and then Chris O'Donnell playing D'Artagnan. And then what year was it? You haven't looked it up, we've been stalling for ages. 1993, just type up the information that we need. Talking to me while I'm talking does not help the show. Let's come up with a system. Not on air. Michael Wincott is in both.
He is, Michael Wincott, of course.
And then it's obviously got Tim Curry in it, who does the excellent, it's not a very good film, it's a terrible film. All for one and more for me. That's what he says.
Doing his best, Alan Rickman.
That's basically what it is, isn't it? They've kind of like, it's a like-for-like recasting. With all of the Musketeers having a quarter of the personality each of Kevin Costner, and sorry, thanks for that. I'm not really allergic to green tea; I just hate it. then they got Bryan Adams. They were just like, right, well, it's going to pretty much be the same thing, so we'll get Bryan Adams today. I think it's a nice idea. In actual fact, rather than doing sequels to it's like the Disney model, where it's
just kind of like,
we did another one. We'll do another fairy tale thing. Like old Disney.
Hammer go in. Done Frankenstein. Do Dracula next month.
We'd get the same cast or the same sort of cast, and then I really like that idea. They could have kept going, but it was different companies, and obviously the second attempt was a pile of shit. How do we get onto that?
Well, I was talking about the way that idea of having a song for a film, a tie-in song, seems to be over now.
Well, speaking of that sort of stuff, Legend, the Tom Cruise Ridley Scott.
Yeah, that's right, Ridley Scott.
There he is.
Ridley Scott, man. I'm another Geordie.
Both from the same part of the world, yeah.
So I was hanging out with Stung, my insect friend, and I thought, shall we go over there? So
who's this then?
This is Ridley.
Is this Ridley?
Yeah, I climbed on his back, and he flew me over there, and I did an aerial shot. And now, you know that aerial shot? Ended up in Kingdom of Heaven. This was Weech. Probably my most critically lambasted movie, but it's actually one of my faves. Good. Check out the director's cut.
Well, I'll get the DVD.
Get the DVD, man. Stick it on Blu-ray. Oh. Stick it on Laserdisc. Well, I like going on Laserdisc. Whack the Laserdisc on, and I'd hop on one side of the Laserdisc, and I get quite a workout. It's like being on a treadmill.
You have to change discs, didn't you, halfway through?
Oh, it's a long one. I tell you that for now. I don't know exactly how long it is, right? Frame for frame, I get confused between the different cuts. But I know that the theatrical cut was like 2.5 hours. Right. But my original cut, you never guess, 4 hours plus. But I forget what we had to actually cut it down to end up on the disc.
You actually have got between Stung and Shaggy now.
About halfway. No, I'm Ridley.
Ridley, yeah, of course, Ridley.
I'm Ridley. Oh, anyway.
Is Stung about? Is he about as well? Do you have a chat?
I'm about. I'm feeling very tired. Oh, because I saw a wee child walking past a field of gold. Field, which it's actually transpired to be daisies. Okay. And I flew on down, and I jabbed him with my tail. And as I flew off,
your arsehole didn't go in, did it?
All my guts fell out my arsehole.
Okay.
Now I'm feeling very tired, and I'm going to need a sit down. Oh, I'm Stung.
It's nice that you say your name after each time you do.
Lots of impressionists always used to do that, didn't they?
right, Steven Seagal, it's not your turn, is it? Yes, it's RTDD. RTDD. Oh, fucking hell! Oh, God!
A lot of the characters. Do you reckon we could get an animated series out of this?
That's as bad as any Parkinson interview where he's interviewing an impressionist. I believe it was Margaret Thatcher who said, I shall not answer that question! I'm all right, Michael.
Very good. So, impressionists are always awful on chat shows, aren't they?
So Rory, tell me what it was like, coming up with your first impression. Rory, tell me what it was like coming up with your first impression. No, stop that, Rory. Now stop that, Rory. Stop copying everything that I'm doing. Stop, Rory, everything that I'm doing. You just imagine. I mean, that was an impression of Michael Parkinson.
Oh, good.
Interviewing a teenage Rory Bremner. Very badly behaved. Okay, so.
What do you reckon?
So I was saying that the film Legend, directed by.
That's right, you are, yeah. So Legend.
The film Legend that I made. There were two versions of it. One of them had a soundtrack by, was it John Barry?
Okay.
I don't think it was John Barry. It was someone. Who did the soundtrack to Legend? There was the English version, there was two versions of it. Anyway, Brian Ferry did the soundtrack to the American version.
Oh, right, okay.
Tangerine Dream did the soundtrack, and Brian Ferry did
a song for it.
A song for it. And there's a music video for it, which is fucking mental if you think about it. Because it's a sword and sorcery. Sandra goes and includes John and... Yeah, but who did the fucking...
And Brian Ferry.
Brian Ferry from Roxy Music.
So it's Tangerine Dream doing the main...
Yeah, but it was originally a thing. Wrigley Scott's feeling a bit ill now. who did the soundtrack? This is just us asking. But it's not on the screen. It's got Jerry Goldsmith. Didn't he do Batman Forever?
I think he did do Batman Forever. Jerry Goldsmith is also... Is he also the Magnificent Seven, is he? Because I think he goes back a bit, doesn't he?
I don't know. Let's not do that. Let's just do stuff that we know about. Absolutely painful waiting for her to type it in. And it's just, you know, if we were able to just... he can play scores for such as touch. Oh, the screen's gone. Oh, no, fuck it. Oh,
they did a few, didn't they? Did a good...
But let's not bother reading them out. It's boring. So, what have you been a fan of this week, Nat? Legend? Did you watch Legend?
No, I didn't watch Legend. I was talking about songs from... I was trying to think what the last one was, Could it have been the last one that had a proper music video? I can think of is the one where it's Puff Daddy for Godzilla, 1998. That might be the last one I can remember. U2 did one for like Tomb Raider, didn't they?
Did they? What was that one? A mole digging in a hole.
Yeah, that's the one. Dig a hole.
Elevation.
Yes, Elevation.
That wasn't from Tomb Raider, was it?
Was it not?
I don't think so.
I think it was.
He's calling Angelina Jolie. Lara Croft, a mole, digging in a hole. I don't think that...
P. Diddy's Come With Me.
What's that from, though? I mean...
Godzilla. Godzilla.
But, yeah, Jamiroquai was from
both
Godzilla.
Both of them were.
Jamiroquai, what is that? I mean, that's weird, isn't it? Jamiroquai, they were a big thing.
Big deal for a while. Could do... You know, they were so big they could do Godzilla soundtracks.
Deep Underground is a genuinely fucking good song. And also, I got a girlfriend back with a Jamiroquai song once.
What, were you singing it to her?
No, I played it out the room and she had to come running back in. uh,
America by someone.
It was half the man I used to be, okay. Which was quite. I mean, there was a whole time when it was all right to like Jamiroquai.
Was there?
Well, the videos were good.
He had a big hat, didn't he? He had a big hat.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's all very easy, isn't it, to look back on your youth and think, what the fuck? But, oh, 4 Jamiroquai albums. Wow. 3 of them were the same one.
I tell you, Jules Holland always stayed loyal to him, though, didn't he? Always stayed loyal. I think he still does it, doesn't he?
Jules Holland.
Very loyal man. Still gets loads of people on where you go. I mean, that seems a weird booking.
What, Jamiroquai and Jules Holland?
Mm.
Jules Holland will go wherever the mood takes him.
Wherever the music takes him.
I remember Alice Cooper on Jules Holland. That was incredible.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, they just had like that, basically, because you know it's all down on the flat sound stage.
Yeah.
And they had all of these amps, and the amps were like from floor to the ceiling. It was just really cool. And everyone came out the woodwork and they said, oh, I saw Escape on Jules Holland. And some people, you know, burnt it onto a disc for me and stuff like that. It was just like, yeah, oh, wow. It's just really kind. People's kindness came out of the woodwork in a good way, I meant. Sounded like, airplane crawling. Yeah, it's really lovely.
What era was that? What year was that would be?
That'd have been like 2012, I think.
And it was a thing where people went, I actually quite liked it. Was that it?
I think that people have a very clear idea. I'm not going to go in to talk about him again, but people have a very clear idea of who he is. I think that's a lot of things. That's a lot of things about other people's fandom, things that people are fans of. You have a very clear idea of what it is. And then when you actually, like Star Trek, it looks impenetrable from the outside. Now, and I'm not a huge Star Trek fan, but I am a fan of the original. I'm a fan of 3 of the original 6 Star Trek films. and what I like about them is the comedy and the characters and their interaction with each other. And that is kind of like, that's a surprise. Because from the outside, you think it's impenetrable.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel like it's funny. It seems quite po-faced and
serious.
And I think,
actually, later on, that's what it did become.
Mm.
And also, there's so many, like, oh, no, I don't give a shit about it. It's so confusing, I don't give a shit about it. It's like what happened with The X-Files. I used to really love The X-Files, watched the first few seasons, and every so often there'd be a an episode that went over 2 episodes or something like that.
Yeah.
And then it got to the point that if you missed an episode, I just discovered alcohol. I was a teenager and I just discovered drinking. I think it was on Thursday nights, and sometimes I'd go out on a Thursday night. And then you'd miss an episode, and then you'd come back to it and it'd be like, what the fuck is going on this week? And then it was just like, oh, do you know what? I'm going to give up.
Tale as old as time. Mm. Yeah, and I think that sort of doesn't happen so much now.
But what happens is things get boiled down to the elements, and then you go, you know. What's the big surprise for you? What's something that you've seen that's completely kind of like
changed? That I thought would be terrible and it turned out to be good?
Or it's just surpassed your expectations?
Mm.
I was thinking something like Dirty Dancing, where you think it's just going to be, especially because it came out in 1987, 1980.
Mm. I remember first time I saw Pretty Woman, I thought, well, it's not going to be any good.
Yeah.
I think I'm like that with a lot of romantic comedies because I think, you know, you just think, oh, this won't be any good. When you see them, you go, God, that's great. It's brilliant. I think I sort of had a, you know, just being, I guess, a boy in the world. Flirty, being a bit like, I'm not watching this.
Flirty Fancing. It's Dirty Dancing. I think there should be a sequel to Dirty Dancing called Rude Moves.
Dirty Dancing.
Yeah, I would say The Pretty Woman, Dirty Dancing, and they're among some of my favourite films. Some Kind of Wonderful. But I don't know why. I don't know why that's a surprise. Really, they're just good. They're good films, aren't they?
Mm.
Oh, you know what? I think it's because it's like heavy metal. Everyone thinks that I'm really into heavy metal. I'm not. I like some heavy metal, but I like a wide variety of music.
But you're very melodic, aren't you? You've still got that kind of thing. You still like that kind of music.
I like. Yeah. I mean, we were saying last week. I like early Beatles music. I like songs that have verse, chorus, and that's the sort of music that I write.
You like to hear the words, don't you?
Well, hear
the words.
Well, it is interesting because coming from a comedy writing point of view, the words are really important, and so when you're writing a comedy song. Or a song that's I don't like comedy songs.
No, I don't. But I guess there's a difference, isn't there? There's comedy songs and there's songs that are funny.
Yeah. And I think it's got to be a song first. And then... and it's got to be an original composition.
Yeah.
There's only a very few people that can get away with doing kind of...
changing the words.
Changing the words for stuff. Yeah, Hendu on a train. Rachel Paris did that, which is basically Starry Starry Night.
Mm.
I mean, yeah, that should that's like ticks all the boxes of what you shouldn't do, really. But it's really good. I really enjoy it. Thinking about it. Yeah, I don't really like that style in particular. But you know, as I say, Rachel does it well.
I think, yeah, it can be.
Because
done.
She does original songs, is the thing. Yeah. So it's just
and I think they should sound like sort of almost like pastiche or something first. So it should sound like there's a definite. Yeah, it should be a song first that feels like it's part of. Could be part of the canon.
But I also think that if the. if the like for like is so good that you can't pass it up, then you go, oh, okay, you've got to allow it, you know? Anyway, I don't want to go off on one about that. I don't want to shit on my own doorstep. but basically, yeah, I really love simple songs that basically, you know. Also, the structure of a classic Beatles song is perfect for a comedy song because it's, you know, you do...
so much for a
set up, payoff, set up. It's a classic rule of three. We go set up... payoff, set up chorus, and then you've got like a middle eight, and then you've got like the payoff where you do a twist, and then like Make It Fat was a song that I wrote, and then that's kind of like, you know, the first verse is all set up, and then the second verse is kind of like takes the story on a bit, and then the third verse is like a twist, and that's like the structure of a joke, and it's like really simple verse chorus. I don't think there's a bridge in that. And so, you know, I would say, like, something that I watched when I was, like, Die Hard. Not Die Hard, fucking hell, how fucking meat-headed is this? But it's like one of those things when you're in the playground and you think something is going to be worse than it is. Like the posters for Nightmare on Elm Street used to fuck me up on the tube.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then when you finally see it, you go, God. Like, I was thinking about films that are essentially, they're like kids' films. The difference between Aliens and Alien 3. Whereas Aliens, yeah, it's got some subtext about being a mother and all of that, but essentially...
It's an
action-adventure film that, if it wasn't gory, a kid could watch that. Yeah. I mean, there's elements of horror in it, but basically it's a roller coaster ride, and at the end of it, it's got a happy ending, and it's not complicated. There's very kind of like thinly drawn good guys and bad guys, and it's like... children's Saturday morning cartoon stuff, whereas Alien 3 is a very complicated film, which is very dark, very depressing. I mean, quality aside, it's a sequel to a film that's basically a Saturday morning kids show, and then everything about that is just kind of like disintegrated, and you go, fucking hell.
It's very grown up in that way. It's kind of like a sort of, all right, it's a film. I've got to watch this properly.
Yeah, but it's not like it's an art house film, but Aliens is gory, so it's an 18, but it's basically made for idiots. I'm not saying that it's shit in any way. Aliens is a great film, but it's kind of like it's a film that anyone can watch and understand.
Mainstream,
okay, idiots, yeah. but do you know what I mean? It's kind of like there's nothing complicated about it. Everyone can watch it. It's kind of like a thing. And Alien 3, not that you have to be super intelligent to watch it, but it is kind of like an acquired taste. Very much like an anchovy or an olive. You can grow to love it, but you'll never prefer it to chocolate. Although some people do, which is the crazy thing. It's crazy. There's people out there, that prefer olives and anchovies to, you know, chocolate. I don't know what the world's coming to, really, sometimes. That's the star of Alien, Ripley's believe it or not. Oh, God.
I was thinking about Alien in the way in, but how that was, I guess, I feel that that became a star franchise, didn't it? Because I think it became kind of, they always wanted Sigourney Weaver back.
I was watching some stuff. There's a guy on YouTube called Oliver Harper who basically does all of these retrospective reviews. I think he does documentaries. He did a documentary about Superman 4 where... basically, Superman 4 was filmed in Milton Keynes, doubling as Metropolis or New York. And he just went around Milton Keynes interviewing all the people. He's got really high production values, and he's made a few like online documentaries. I would like to get him on as a guest. We've sort of been in contact with each other a bit on Twitter. And I really love his videos. So there's a shout out.
Superman 4 was the first film as a kid where I watched it and realised that films could be bad.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember like going in, and it was like totally blew my mind when you're watching it going, oh, Superman, a new Superman film, and you get to see it. So it's cinema, and it's like, new Superman film at cinema, yes please, first one I've seen at the cinema, and just being sort of bewildered by it. And everything was like, and there's a bit in it where he never even turns into Superman on screen. He will leave shot and come back as Superman. And there's even a bit where he goes to tear his shirt and it cuts away. And you think, could they not afford a shirt? But it's that sort of awareness of it when you're like eight and going, wait a minute. And that sort of, all these sort of things just feel like, how is this possible? How is this a bad
film?
It's crazy.
I mean, it's like when you watch it, there's kind of like, there's absolutely no effort put into he goes to the moon and the backdrop is space. And there's no effort to disguise the fact that it's a black cloth. It's like they've basically filmed it in a school drama studio, and there's a black cloth in the background, and you can see it's black cloth. And it's not like, oh, with retrospectively, with hindsight, you look back on it and go, oh, those special effects are dated. Yeah. They've basically doubled outer space for a black sheet. And, it's just... Superman 4's got a really interesting production, but I would watch the Oliver Harper thing. How did we get onto the Oliver Harper thing? Because he was talking about all of the different... So the original... Alien 3 was going to be, Ripley was going to still be in cryogenics, and it was going to follow. They were worried about the fact that there weren't enough men. Basically, it was a male fan base for Alien. And they said, right, well, rather than have a female lead, we'll have her in cryosleep, and then we'll make the third one about Michael Biehn.
Oh, right, okay.
And there were but I mean, Alien 3 has got such a huge production history that, you know. I just think that. Yeah, it's just one of those things where you go, it's difficult to know who Alien 3 is for.
Hmm.
And I just think Alien Resurrection is, I hated it at the time so much. Me and I had a friend at school, and we fell out over how much we hated Alien Resurrection. This is true. We fell out over it, and we didn't really, our friendship never recovered really. I mean, we were so passionate about it, and he died a few years later, and we never made up over it. One of my big regrets.
And it's sad.
You know. There you go. What are you pulling that face for? Should I get one of our special guests back in? Fucking hell. So keep it light. But let that be a thing. It's interesting. It's good to have opinions. It is good to have opinions about stuff. And I think that what we forget about in the age of the internet is that everyone thinks that their opinions are the only things that matter. Mm. When in actual fact, human interaction is the thing that really matters. And it's just films. You can get upset about Star Wars. You can get upset about people are kicking off over the new He-Man. It's like 40-year-old men going, oh, he's not my He-Man. He's not my He-Man. Prince Adam, maybe, but not He-Man. And you're just like, get a fucking life. Honestly, get a fucking life. It's a cartoon series that was designed to sell toys that were only made because they were designed for Conan the Barbarian. They realised it was an adult film, so they had to repackage them as kids' films. The cartoon series was just designed so that they could sell the product. And now you're getting all precious over... Fucking hell, give the kid a chance. They're like going, he's in romantic comedies, he can't be He-Man. And you go, he's an actor. Or, I don't know, I've not seen him in anything. I don't know what his range is, but he's just in some Netflix romantic comedy. To give him a fucking chance.
I always think that way.
You're a 40, 50-year-old man and you're shitting on a 22-year-old's future. It's just like, get a fucking life. It's He-Man, you fucking prick. There's already been one terrible He-Man film. I think you'll survive another one, you cunt. Fucking hell. Fucking hell. I can't remember who he is. Who's the new actor playing?
I can't remember. Can we any way we can...
Google account.
There we go.
That's what we can do. what were your final thoughts on this, Nat?
Final thoughts. I was thinking I always quite liked Alien Resurrection when I saw it, but I haven't seen it since 1998, and I don't know if I ever want to see it.
It's just awful. I mean, it was just like the what you can say what you like about Alien 3, right? We've probably said this before. The first three Alien films, they're all wildly different from each other, but they're within the same universe. And the fourth Alien film is kind of like, it's just this ridiculous, weird blend of just really gloopy gore effects, quite an unpleasant storyline, bad special effects and comedy, and characters that don't have any depth to them whatsoever. And the thing that I would say about the first Alien is that the character work in that is just some of the best. I mean, they've basically made a Francis Ford Coppola film in space. Okay. And then with Aliens, it's kind of like, the characters are thinly drawn, but they're very precisely drawn, where you know exactly which who the characters are within a couple of lines of dialogue. And then, you know, everyone looks exactly the same as each other in Alien 3. It's very difficult to tell who's who. But that's also to do with the studio edit. And then with Alien Resurrection, they kind of do what James Cameron does, only really badly, where they all have like a line of dialogue, but it's so cheesy, and they're really hamming it up so much. Like there's nobody in charge of quality on that film. And I just think it's just, I really hated it. Really, really hate it. I think I probably prefer, I definitely prefer Prometheus to it, but do you know what, Nat? I don't want this show to be
negative.
Not negative. This show. We're both approaching 40.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's all very well to make fun of people getting upset about He-Man, but fucking hell, we're not that different. Right, I'm going to play a song.
Just gonna shine. Flowers will bloom and all will be fine. But nothing'll grow on this burnt cursive ground, 'cause the breath of the death is the only sound.
Fubar Radio.
Got to listen to the whole track.
Right
the
to the end.
Oh, you've got to listen to the whole track, otherwise what's the point in playing it?
That was Alice Cooper, Nick, and it was...
So stuff like Nightmare on Elm Street. So I used to think that... I had a friend who was older than me that used to report back once he'd been to the cinema. And so I used to live vicariously through him about all the films. And I used to think that it was called The Predator. I used to get my films mixed up. Maybe like Terminator, Predator, Predator. What have I seen? What have you seen? Have you seen anything interesting this week?
Not really. I've just gone through my list and there's nothing particularly fascinating. I watched Cloud Atlas, but it's probably only worth talking about if you've seen it.
No, well, so that's the Wachowskis, right?
Yeah.
It's got Tom Hanks in it.
It's got Tom Hanks.
And Hugh Grant. You watched it past part of your Hugh Grant season, was it?
Hugh Grant season.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Does
it
live up to
baffling.
Hugh Grant's other films?
It's the same. It's very much like a lot of Hugh Grant's other films. It's totally baffling.
Who else is in it?
Jim Broadbent.
Yeah.
So everyone plays multiple parts across multiple different eras of time, including from the past into the far future.
Yeah.
And it is... strange, but it's got like a chutzpah to it. So like even like it's like it's quite jolly. It's got quite a jolly tone to it. So it's kind of a bit more. It's not difficult to watch, except at the end of it, you're like, you sort of think I've barely any idea about that. But if you went, what I think it's about is this. I think when you read anything up on it, it does seem to be. That is what it's about.
Yeah, I've decided to start taking stuff at face value.
Yeah, and I think that is what it's meant to be.
Because I realised that you can really unlike a film. Mm.
I think what it is, it's the multiple short films that are all edited together, and each one sort of has some sort of influence. It's basically all set. They're basically different stories from the same universe.
It's based on a novel, isn't it?
Yeah, and so they are, and it's how the effects of a story that might have happened hundreds of years ago will have some impact on a story that will take place in that future, in the future of that story, and how that story will have an impact on another story. And it's just about how all your actions will essentially influence things that you'll never know about.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of what it's about.
I definitely want to see it. I just never really loved the Wachowskis.
No.
Except for Bound. I loved Bound, their first film.
Hmm.
Was it the first film? It was the
yeah.
first one. But then I was never a massive fan of The Matrix. But you didn't have to be. 1999 was a good year. We've talked about that. But then, so I didn't feel like, I didn't like The Matrix. I didn't feel particularly left out. But it was, I mean, the one problem I had with The Matrix was that if you die in The Matrix, you die in real life. And then there's that huge sequence where they go around shooting all the security guards. And they're really killing them, though, because it's not like they're killing computer. Also, I thought The Matrix would be more interesting if it was filmed like it was the real world. Everything was in like blacks and greens and stuff. And you go, yeah, well, it's like a computer world. But I always thought that it would be more interesting if they were trying to convince us that, you know, I guess like Inception.
The real world is...
Like the real world is what we're living in, you know. So I just thought it was... I know that it being stylized was its big selling point at the time. But I just... That was one of the things that I thought, oh, when I saw it, I was just like, oh, I thought it was going to be like, our world is the fake world that we live in. And we've just bought tickets to go and see this film called The Matrix, but we're actually, you know, and if you scratch beneath the surface of our world, but really it was much more kind of allegorical.
The Wachowskis, they are an odd one, because it's like then, like all their films have something about them which are like really interesting, and like it's like they're often almost really good, I think. And they've got like at some level they are like they're sort of on it. I really like Speed Racer has that thing where you go, it looks amazing, and it looks so much like what they're trying to do, and yet you're watching it and you go, God, it's boring.
It made me, well, I don't know, I never got into it because of it. It just made me feel ill. Like,
well, I think that is
it
part,
made me
yeah.
feel like Batman and Robin, you know, where. But obviously, I think it's done better than Batman Robin. But it felt I couldn't see the
feels
point.
Like it's a real exercise in that sort of production.
Also, I didn't have any. Like, I didn't have any connection. I didn't have any personal connection to Speed Racer.
Yeah, and but like if you look at something like the Robert Rodriguez Frank Miller Sin City, and you go, oh yeah, it is exactly like the comics, and you go, what's the point though of just doing a thing that's so much like that?
I think you get that from Watchmen.
And it's just totally yeah, same thing.
When you watch,
it's totally stylized,
I really,
but you don't.
I really enjoyed Watchmen, but then when you watch it, you go, there's nothing that you get out of this that you wouldn't have got out of the book. And then also the changes, you go, why did you change that? And then you end up watching it just getting hung up on the... But not like in a I'm an obsessed fan kind of way. Just I had to do a Watchmen comedy night, and so I read the Watchmen book. I'd never read it before, so I read the Watchmen book, and I finished it the day of the gig. And then on the day of the gig, I went and watched the film, and then from the film, I went straight on stage. And so when I was watching it, I was just there going, why did I change that bit? And what's that bit about? And then I've never watched it since. I got it on Blu-ray because I thought, oh, I really like that film. And I did like the film, but I just never watched it since. What else did the Wachowskis do? They did the three Matrix films. They did Speed Racer.
Then he seems to... Because I think even Cloud Atlas is only... It's like co-directed by one of them, and the other one, it's co-directed by Tom Tykwer, who I think did Run Lola Run. So it's like...
Run Lola Run? Run's incredible.
Yeah, I think it's that guy.
But that's another film that I haven't watched since it came out. And I thought that was a spin-off from The Fifth Element. At the time, you know, because of the hair.
Thingy was them, was it? Or co-directed by them was V for Vendetta.
So it's got that was started sort of by someone else, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I think all that... I feel like a lot of their projects are, right? I don't know what they've done, which is just them and not like them
Matrix,
working with
but they were like,
they produce it or they have some sort of influence on it. Or
they were like the golden children, though, weren't they?
Yeah,
the
they could Matrix, have done anything.
And then they did do anything, and it turned out that their instincts were fucking awful. I don't know. To be honest, I can't really have much of an opinion on them. I really like Bound, and then nothing else that they've ever done has really done it for me. But I haven't watched everything. What did they do? Jupiter Ascending.
Yeah, that's a mess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never saw that.
Yeah.
I think I'd sort of given up by then.
So what I watched this week, The Highwaymen, starring Kevin Costner and Woody Harrelson on Netflix.
Okay.
And as soon as it came up, it said, oh, Kim Costner's made a film, a period film, where he plays one of the cops that hunted down Bonnie and Clyde. And straight away I was like, yep. And you know when you go on Netflix and it takes you fucking ages of fucking around to find something that you want to watch?
Yeah.
And I think it was on Saturday, and I switched Netflix on, and the first thing that came up was Highwaymen. I was like, yep! And I pressed it before even the trailer came on, and I started watching it. And straight away, I loved it.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like a good, certainly.
Well, they mentioned Wyatt Earp quite early on. It's the old days of law enforcement, of the old style of law enforcement, when you get like a posse and you go down and hunt people down. And they like talk about Wyatt Earp. And then you're also really, so you've got Kevin Costner, who's in his 60s, who's playing an old kind of, he's not a cowboy, he's like an old kind of like detective kind of, law enforcer, what do you call them? The kind of there's something that was post cowboys, but
not sheriff,
but the
US marshal,
like a marshal, right? And the kind of guys that they get together like a posse of people and they go around and they hunt them down. And his glory days are behind him, and he's like. It's like that classic being asked out of retirement for one last job. But basically, he is he's at that point in his career that the guy who played Wyatt Earp would be, you know? But he's also the guy that played Elliot Ness. And he's also the guy that played Jim fucking, what's his name?
Yes, the JFK guy.
JFK guy. What's his name? It begins with a G. So obvious. Yeah. Oh, God, it's on the tip of my tongue. Is this radio? Jim. Jim.
Jim Garrison.
Jim Garrison.
Yeah. It does already sound like an old style Kevin Costner movie.
So it's like, and also it feels really similar to Perfect World in many respects, where it's just all of these things where it's just kind of like, it's Kevin Costner. And he's like, it's basically only the guy that could have had his career of doing like westerns, you know, postmodern westerns. And detective films and kind of a love of kind of period movies. Like Kevin Costner was, someone was saying that Kevin Costner was kind of like, basically, is the actor that was born to play period, you know?
Mm.
Like Hidden Figures is probably one of my favourite films that I've seen in the last couple of years, like new films. Hidden Figures, if you've not seen Hidden Figures, it's about the black women that helped NASA get into space that were basically... largely written out of history, and Kevin Costner plays like a mentor character in that, and that's an incredible film. And it's he's just like one of those guys that you put in a film and instantly you've got like a setting for it.
Mm.
And I think like a lot of his other films where he's like playing modern day, there's a period of time where he's perfect. You know, go too far back forward, you go too far back. Medieval times, Robin Hood, no. And you go too far forward and you got Waterworld, yeah, no. And modern day, it's just kind of like, No Way Out is an incredible film. So you've got this Kevin Costner playing kind of period in this film, and you go, that's great. And Woody Harrelson has become, I think, one of my most favourite actors. Just I think that anything with him in is worth a watch. Mm. And that's kind of like come a bit out of left field for me, because I didn't realise how much I loved Woody Harrelson until quite recently, when you go, oh, he's good in everything. When Three Billboards, I think he's by far and away the best thing in Three Billboards. Just an amazing performance. And like a spin on his Woody Harrelson kind of persona, where it's kind of, he's bringing something completely new and different to something that's really familiar. I think he's really... I'm not sure how underrated he is now, because people are kind of like putting him in stuff.
Well.
But I think for a long time he was the guy out of White Men Can't Jump and Cheers. I remember when he was cast in Natural Born Killers, and it was like, what? You've done what? That's like... So that's the setup. You've got Kevin Costner playing that kind of character. And then I stopped it after about 20 minutes, and my friend was texting me. And she said, what are you doing? I said, I'm watching... this Kevin Costner thing. And she goes, oh, that's going to be terrible. And she sent me the Guardian review, and it got 1 out of 5 stars. And then I was just like, oh, do you know, I was really enjoying it. It was a Saturday. I spent the whole of Saturday in my flat, my new flat. And I just didn't worry about unpacking anything. I was watching a film, and then all of a sudden you realise that you're watching this film that you're actually really enjoying. And it's got 1 star. It's like 25 minutes into it, and I was really enjoying it, and I couldn't work it out.
I'm sure I've heard people this week on social media being like, oh, I saw that, that was good.
I started watching it again, you know, picked it back up again after about a half-hour break, and then it tainted the film, and I was kind of completely kind of like going, well, what is there to not like about it? I don't want to be an idiot and to be liking it.
Mm.
I think what it is it's not... because of the period it's set in, it's fairly light on gun restrictions, so there's a lot of guns, and there's a lot of kind of like talking about whether you're born bad or you're taught it, and then it's kind of like justifying the fact that actually corporal punishment and going around hunting people in a great big posse and hunting down Bonnie and Clyde, or to they're obviously using that as some sort of metaphor, and it's subtext, and you're like,
right, yeah.
And then you go, actually, if you put modern day politics onto this film, it's quite ugly. And then there's also the whole Me Too and Time's Up thing, where you've got Kevin Costner and Woody Harrelson playing old guys, old white guys that are desperately, and I didn't read the article, I just sort of like, this is what I can assume. Basically, they're playing old guys that are basically going, well, what's our place in the world?
Right.
The only thing we can do, the only thing me, Kevin Costner, can do is make the sort of films that I've always made.
That becomes quite meta in itself, right?
That so I think that yet. It's an incredibly meta film where you're like going, he's made this film about like the brutality and ugliness of being a white male in today's society and having to just go back to work and pick up the guns and go out and
just
hunt down.
And do the thing I've always done.
Do the thing that you've always done. And I think that that's actually quite an interesting take on it.
Well, also, because when you initially said that, it's people that hunt down Bonnie and Clyde, I immediately think, oh, yeah, because Bonnie and Clyde's one of those films where they're sort of the movie of Bonnie and Clyde is to be done. It's like seen at the time as being very modern, but at that time, it's that kind of. Having these people who are like villains, but having them as like these sort of quite charming villains.
Superstars.
Go, oh, what a great, yeah, what a great.
Celebrities. Yeah. And that's what the film is. It's like going, there were all these young kids, and they were like in their early 20s, late teens, and they go around mass murdering people. Well, not, they don't mass murder specific people, they mass murder a group of people. And they were celebrities, and it's kind of like going, hang on, that's all bollocks. What? You know, I've worked my whole career and now I'm being forgotten about. And you have these people that are famous for doing absolutely fuck all.
Yeah.
And they're national treasures.
And they're bad people.
And they're bad people. And it's kind of like, it's really interesting. It's just an interesting take on it.
I thought initially it sounds like it.
Anyway, so I can see that there's a lot of... what I'm saying is that in my own little bubble, I was enjoying the film for what it was. I love Kevin Costner. And I really enjoyed like seeing him, you know...
In a Kevin Costner film.
Rather than a Superman film. And and then, you know, you go, oh, okay, right, well, maybe... I just think that... Sometimes I know that we don't really review stuff, we just talk about what we think. And you're quite, you the listener, and Nathaniel, and me, we're allowed to disagree with each other, it's just a conversation. But I just think it's weird that I found it kind of like, oh, I'm that, what do you call it, influenced. We're all influenced, but you just like go, I'd rather have not read that review until afterwards and form my own opinion. Okay, so what are you saying? Do the review. What? Do you see how I'm moving forward towards the controls and you're giving me instructions? If anything, you're delaying it. So I'm going to play your song now. That's what I think. Anyway, I really enjoyed it. But I enjoyed the debate and the conversation around it as almost as much as the film. And even talking to you about it has made me think about it on different levels, like the teenage Bonnie and Clyde versus old age Kevin Costner. Yeah, I didn't think of that while I was watching it. It's kind of interesting to sort of like pull things.
Yeah, it sounds like a good movie.
It starts off better, and then it does sort of fall apart a little. It doesn't fall apart; it just gets less interesting. You know where it's going. It's on a par of like something like Public Enemies. So I'm going to play your song now.
Yes.
On a clear day, rise and look around you, and you'll see who you are. On a clear day, how it will astound you, that the glow of your being out shines every star. You'll feel part of every mountain, sea, and shore, and you'll hear you've never heard before. And on that clear day, on that clear day, you will see forever and ever more. On the clear day, the glow of your being outshines every star. You feel a part of every mountain, sea, and shore, and you'll hear from far and near a world you never heard before. And on that clear day. On that clear day you will see forever and ever and ever and evermore. On a very clear day you will see forever. On a very clear day you will see forever. King 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 king. On a clear day you will see forever. If you're stoned enough you will see forever. Fly eastern.
Nat's Fan Club on
FUBAR
Radio.
So we're all feeling ill in the studio. my name is Nick Helmut. That's Nathaniel
Metcalf.
What is the surname? And we're joined in the studio now by my friend and yours, Mr. Tom Meaton.
Hello, listeners.
Hello, how are you doing?
Terrible.
Yeah, you're really ill. I think we're all slightly differently ill from each other. But
we've all got. Maybe we could swap illnesses.
No, I don't want your one.
Me either.
Mine is the best one.
No. Your one's the worst.
No, thank you.
Maybe your one is the best one in a way.
My one helps you lose weight.
Right.
like a detox.
Hmm. It is.
It is a little bit.
Anyway.
Anyway, I bought you a present.
Oh, wow.
I bought you some Superman and Batman candy sticks.
Is that a genuine present or a pretend one?
Shit pretend present. I mean, it's a genuine. What a shit present.
We'll need that back afterwards.
Just for the show.
I will need it next week. No, it's genuine.
All right, lovely. Have you had a look at the tattoo?
No, look, it's sealed.
You might have resealed it. Come on, look,
you're going to be our guest for the next 52 minutes. You've got to have. You've got to have some level of trust with us, all right?
Okay.
I can see why it's a worry, though. I can see why in your delicate position, I can see how that would be a daunting prospect.
Yeah, exactly. I think I'll be all right. Anyway. This isn't why I'm here.
You can talk about anything you want. If you do want to talk about Catherine Wheeling in the bathroom, then absolutely go for it. Catherine Wheeling, I think, is a term that I invented.
Everyone knows what it means.
And it's not both ends for you, so it's fine.
It's
anyway,
not. Just the one.
Touch wood.
Catherine stick.
Just a disappointing Catherine Wheel on a wet Guy Fawkes night. The fireworks have been left out overnight and they're only half working.
It's a damp squib.
twice a week, I reckon, I think about. There was a thing on TV, like a sort of MTV show, years ago I watched. And what it was like the MTV sort of young presenters at the time were trying to get these people to sort of embarrass them at a festival. And they all had like a microphone. They're waiting outside the toilets, and as people were coming out, they were going number one and number two, and then in a kind of comedy way. And one guy just came out and went, both. And I think about that all the time. I'm just like, it's sort of just on this raw answer, which absolutely sort of just undermined what they were doing. It's like, yeah, well, I guess if you're having a number two, you probably are also having a number one.
I think it's one.
That's what it'd be number one. Isn't that what you call a three?
Is that a three? One and two?
Or is that 12?
Natalie, Tom's voice is very low in my ears. Is it low in your ears? No, so he's fine.
It's just my voice.
I wouldn't worry about it.
It's quite low.
No.
If you're feeling blocked up and combined with my voice, then we might have reached some.
It's a perfect storm. Speaking of perfect storm, what's your favourite George Clooney movie? Nerds. That's Fan Club.
Presumably there is a.
I think you're one of the only guests that's ever bothered listening to the show before he's come on.
And I'm surprised you're here. You're still here.
Normally people are like, literally, this isn't the show, is it? This isn't the show.
This is it. How did you get this?
I lived around the corner. It was very convenient for me at the time. It's slightly less convenient now that I've moved 10 minutes further that way, but still convenient. It's slightly further for Nat. He lives other side of town. But it will pay off dividends eventually.
Yeah.
One of the savings that you make on. We don't make any savings, no. but the money that you make off this, you can spend on shoes.
Sure. Steps as well. Do some steps from the station and things here. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Actually, not that many because I just come by cheap.
No, but what you should start doing is using the bloody stairs at Caledonian Road. It's about 186, and oh, you do feel it when you get up there. But of fucking you hell, you do the steps at Caledonian Road. And the first time you do it, you feel 186 steps, right? Yeah. But when you do 186 steps the next time, you feel maybe 187. That's more.
Hang on,
I've done it wrong. It gets worse before it gets better. Then you feel 187, right? Then you do it the third time, and then you feel 182. And then the fourth time you do it, 184 again, goes back up. But then by about the 10th time you're doing it, you're only feeling about 140. Yeah, and then by the time you get to my point, which is many times into it, you feel about three steps.
It's like taking the lift.
It's like taking the lift. In actual fact, even at its very worst, it's quicker than getting the lift.
Is that right?
I find that at my very worst, when I first started, it's not quicker than the lift. It's the same as getting the lift. People would get on the lift and it would be rammed, and you go, "Fuck that! I'm not getting on with them cunts." And so I'd go up the stairs, and by the time I got to the top of the stairs, they were just going through the barriers, and then you can get that down to the point that you're actually beating them.
Were you all sweaty though, and sort of spent?
Oh yeah. Well, part of the reason why I didn't quite meet them at the barriers was because there's that final push where there's about 8 steps at the end, and I'll just stand on the platform. I'll stand on the landing just for a little bit so that I don't
breathing
look like
deep.
So much of a cunt. Catch my breath, wipe the sweat off with my Pavarotti napkin that I carry around with me, and and then I sort of like take a deep breath and just be like, yeah, just to the stairs, I'm alright. I'm absolutely fine.
It wouldn't be like that bit in Superman the movie where the fella who's not Christopher Reeve but he's probably older than him is playing him as a teenager.
That's so weird, isn't it, when they do that?
Yes, isn't that, the age difference isn't significant enough that you'd justify having another actor.
No. Do you know what we're talking about there?
I can't explicitly recall it.
Have you not seen Richard Donner's Superman?
I've seen Superman.
Yeah, the original.
Yeah, I just can't remember it. I've probably watched it in about 1983.
78.
1983? Well, 1983. It was only like 5 years old then. It was younger then when than Avatar is now.
That's Fan Club.
It is!
That's what we're talking about.
Of course, Richard Donner, director of Superman and the Lethal Weapon franchise, Maverick, and the inventor of the kebab. So...
Yes.
Big fan of yours, Tom. I've known you for a very long time.
Well, yeah.
I'd say...
Where did you meet?
I know where I met you, but I think you probably don't remember.
Oh, okay, go on. Who's going first?
You can go first.
You ran up. You were on the lift at Caledonian Road Station.
And I lapped you.
Past. Sweaty beast.
He was when he went past. He gave me the finger as he went.
Flying past. Sweat in my eyes. All sorts. Was it a gig? Are you thinking it's a...
I used to put out chairs for Stella Ratner at Stella Cellar.
Did you?
Yeah, and that was before I was a comedian. And
really?
You're not the first guest. It was Daniel Lawrence Taylor as well, wasn't it? Eventually, we're getting them all on. And I wanted to basically just bring something up with you. You never said thanks, Tom.
Thanks for doing the chairs.
You never said thanks.
I'm so sorry I didn't thank you. I was probably preoccupied thinking about... What's this going to be like tonight?
It was. I can tell you now. Okay. It was going to be awful.
That old friend.
That was your. That was in your double act, Oram and Meaton.
Yeah. So yeah. Yeah. Steve Oram.
Mm-hmm.
Is that still Oram. Like, how does that work as a double act now?
Are we still a double act? Well, I don't know if you'd call us a double act anymore because we're not really doing it. We did a gig that we sort of said, this might be our last one, mightn't it? Last year.
In the autumn.
Yeah, because we got bored of trying to hunt them down and people slowly stopped asking us to do them.
I didn't.
So we, you know, we enjoyed it, but we're still doing stuff, that's the thing.
But are you still writing stuff? Were you doing like a greatest hits?
Well, what we did, in fact, we just done a short that's going to be in a Loco Comedy Festival in early summer. Can't remember when that is. Anyway, we've done a short together that is like a filming of one of our sketches that we used to do on stage.
Is it? Which one?
It's, you might not have seen it because it's relatively new. It's called The Red Man.
Right.
Steve plays a alcoholic tramp.
I'm laughing already, even though it's a serious issue. In fact, I should frown on you a little bit.
WTF? Oh.
There we go.
Thank you.
Yeah, we had it
in
a week,
that one. We've
got what's a new one today.
If you don't know who Steve Oram is, Google the cunt.
There you go.
That's my other one.
You're more likely to know who Steve Oram is than me, to be fair.
Not to interject, but you, Steve, I was just in a short film. I just did a short film with him.
Yes, he
don't know what the quality of that is going to be. But it was very fun hanging out with him for a day. But he wrote and directed the film which you were in.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
So that's
have you seen it?
I haven't seen it. Do you know what? I've got it on DVD and it's one
are
of...
Are you a bit scared?
It's one of... Do you know what? It's like what I've found in my later years is that I don't like being challenged. And it's like one of the ones that I got from FOP when I go into FOP and I'm just like, oh my God, I'll get this because obviously I know the guys that made it. And I put it on my stack of things and it's one of the ones that are still in the cellophane because it's like it's on my stack of things. It's my two watch pile, and it's kind of whenever there's one of those, I go, that looks challenging. I'm going to go to my Expendables box set and maybe watch one of those.
It is challenging, though. You're right.
I was reading the description of it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is. Everyone talks like monkeys throughout the entire film.
And it's an hour and a half, is it? It's an hour and a
half. Yeah. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
But there's, I don't know. It is a challenge. If that appeals to you, then you're going to love it.
It does appeal.
But it's also got a story that you can follow. Anyway, it's all very visual, and there's some great people in it.
It does.
It's got Toya Wilcox. It's got the Boosh Boys.
Oh, Julian, it's got Toya Wilcox.
Toya Wilcox is in it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you worked?
It's a story. Is he allowed to tell a story?
I don't know. About 79 minutes. Okay, I'll give it a go, actually. It's just come up. So you've just filmed a short with him?
Yes, we just filmed a short. And that was a live thing that'll be out and about on the internet soon, I think. We'll release it. We'll do this little festival and then we'll release it.
And
then we're working on a bigger feature together, super low budget. Because we both got into making sort of super low budget features.
See, okay, I wanted to get to that, but yeah. I guess you've brought it forward a bit. Okay, we'll just go with the flow.
All right, sorry.
Natalie, we're just going to go with the flow now. I'm just going to go off text. So,
coming off script.
So you started off doing. So you were in Wingnut as well, right?
The band.
The band.
In inverted commas, yeah.
What was Wingnut? I don't know Wingnut.
Well, hang on. All right. Okay, let's go through it chronologically. So you're Tom. who are you?
No, I'm Steve Oram.
You're Tom Meehan, right? So I first became aware of you in about 2007 when I was putting out seats for Stella Ratner and Stella Cella just at Barcode in Soho. It was a sketch and character-based comedy night, which was awful. but I was sort of in charge of that.
I love these stories. I love that.
Anyway, you used to come out and you did a sketch, which was a song called In the Woods.
Yes.
Where did you find him? In the woods.
Where does he live? In the woods. Where does he live? In the woods. Yeah. He lives in the woods.
It's better than he's made it out to be. It's listeners.
Well, I was jumping around.
You were in a little Robin Hood outfit.
I was a little pixie.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, but where
I don't know why people stopped asking us to do stuff.
It was fucking good, right? No, and it's had a very lasting memory. And you're saying that you don't go a week without thinking about that Portillo challenge. I don't go a week without saying to myself at some point, I'm Paul Simon and I'm Art Garfunkel, okay. Right? which you did on, I'm just basically telling you what you've done, which
nice.
You did on Paramount Comedy Channel, which was like the in-between linky bits, when they had an American show and they'd already put adverts in and it still wasn't long enough. They'd get some British comedians to come in and put some content together.
Yes.
And you did a thing with Simon...
Farnaby,
where he was Art Car Funkle and you were Paul Simon, and you played him like, I think I brought it up the other week as well, you played him like an American hood.
It was like that. It's basically like that. It's the only American accent I can do.
And,
and yo, Artie, what you doing?
Every week, Simon Farnaby would have like more and more like bruises. He'd be more and more like abused. And it was really funny. And... And so where did you... So you're part of all of that lot.
Yeah, yeah. We were
and Alice Lowe.
Alice, yeah. Alice and Steve.
All the Sightseers lot.
Yeah.
I recently watched The Ghoul. And I watched Tank 432.
Oh, really? That's interesting. Yeah.
I was disappointed that your character disappears quite early on.
I bet it's not a particular spoiler, but I don't make it, do I?
Yeah, but...
I disappear. Well...
You disappear. It's a fucking confusing film.
You did watch it then. You paid proper attention.
It's a confusing film.
It is quite confusing, yes. It's a sort of psychological thriller, really. It's not that much to do with fighting and machine guns. It's quite... in a way, it got marketed to make it look like it had more to do with tanks and guns and shooting than it actually does.
Well, I was reading a review of it online, and someone was very angry with Netflix for describing it as an action adventure.
Yeah.
And it's really not. It's about it's about a small group of mercenaries who you see them at the end of their conflict, and then they hide in a tank for an hour. And it's not really an action adventure; it's more like a psychological thriller.
Yes, it's very good. It's a challenging, and again, it's a bit of a challenge.
It's challenging.
It's quite hard to know what it's going on because there's lots of sort of trippy business.
It's very confusing, they don't really tie up all the loose ends. It's open for interpretation a bit at the end.
I accept all of that. Yes, it is. Yes. But I might be working with the director and producer again, so I think it is very...
I loved it.
...good film.
I loved it.
very good film.
If there's any comic relief parts, then... What I find it... And also Ben Wheatley produced...
He is the exec on it, yeah.
It's weird how, there's no British film industry other than Shane Meadows and Ben Wheatley.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, and the more I watch, the more Ben Wheatley is over absolutely every film that's kind of like come out. And
well, because he did it for The Ghoul as well. He came on late, basically, and as an exec. And what that does, obviously, is it gives you a badge. Because there's lots of films getting made. Some of them are good, some of them are not so good. And you've got to try and break through. So if you get Ben Wheatley's badge of approval, then obviously that helps the film. So it meant that we could do a lot more with it than we ever imagined, really.
Well,
to get
you'd
his
get
support.
A wider release. And
yeah, just general, PR and everything. So it's a very, we always saw it as a very positive thing that he's helping new filmmakers, really.
Absolutely. He was on the BAFTA panel when my film Elephant got nominated.
You were not nominated for a BAFTA.
I was
as well,
always wanted to pin him down and find out what he thought of it. But anyway, Ben Wheatley, so he's sort of all over your stuff. Obviously, he works with Alice and Steve on Sightseers, which you were in.
Yes.
What I find interesting about what you do is that I think of you as a very funny person.
Why, thank you. I don't particularly.
I think you're a funny guy.
Yes.
You're a funny guy. but I think of you as a comedian, and then the stuff that, like The Ghoul, which you produced as well, you are, it's a very serious film.
It's not funny in the slightest.
But it is, you watch those films and you almost expect it by cast to go, this will be funny.
Well,
a bit
I know.
Of a laugh.
Yeah. Oh, lovely, a knockabout comedy. Oh, no, it's about depression. That is a sort of, because Gareth, who made The Ghoul, really, directed it, wrote it. He was from a comedy background as well. But really, he wanted to make psychological thrillers. So that's why it's not sort of funny. But our pool of people, you know, Alice is in that as well. Alice Lowe's in that as well. And Paul Kay, who I'd worked with. And they're all from the comedy world. So it is a weird mixture.
And
Gareth thinks that the comedians.
Ross. What's his name?
Yes, yeah, Dan Skinner, who's mm-hmm. brilliant. Actually.
Oh, he's great in that.
Yeah, and
he?
Rufus Jones, who's got a sitcom on Channel 4
and,
at the moment.
Jeffrey
McGiven.
He's fucking great. His first scene in that is really funny.
It's amazing. If anything, he's got a bit more of a comic sensibility about him.
And he needs, but I think it needs.
That was the idea. Yeah, the lift.
What I like about your performance in that is it starts off as kind of like a detective kind of movie.
Yes.
And when you're first introduced, you're playing a very cool detective.
Yes.
And which quickly deteriorates into sleeping on a piss-stained mattress. But your first shot, it's kind of like, you could be kind of like from one of them Norwegian kind of mystery thrillers.
Exactly, yeah, that was the idea.
That's the idea. It sets up exactly the sort of thing it is. And Dan Skinner obviously sells that as well.
Yeah, he's very good at that. Because it was, in fact, one of the references is, and I'm not going to remember his name now, but you will, I'm sure, is from Le Samurai, the French film. Where
Jean-Pierre Melville.
Yes, and is it Alain Delon?
Alain Delon,
of course.
He's the cholera.
And good pronunciation on that. I'd keep out of it and just let you two thrash it out. But you're quite right. It was both of those guys.
But that was one of the references. And but I found it quite hard to be sort of cool.
Do you find it self-conscious? So is that a thing? Do you find it easier in comedy? Do you find it easier
comedies,
to...
Yeah, well, it's easier to be a goon, isn't it? And not worry about it too much.
Comedy is... it's not easy, but it's... Comedy is...
But it's easier. What I found is...
Hang on, I haven't quite finished my thought. Let me just finish my thought.
How long does this normally take now?
It's not that comedy's...
should be done in about...
If you've got natural funny bones like you or I, then I don't know. I just think that drama is significant. Once you've mastered comedy, as I don't think there's any doubt that everyone in this room has.
The masters.
And I like to think of this show as a masterclass. But once you've done comedy, and you've... I did theatre and education, where I wrote a show about car crashes and then lectured 15-year-old boys not to speed their cars. And they hated me.
Wow.
I did that for theatre and education when I was 23, 24.
Wow.
And I was just thinking, once I've done that, comedy will be fucking easy. And then you do comedy, and then once you've done comedy, you go, fucking hell, you go back to doing drama, and it's just like, I don't have to... I can do all of the acting without having to make people laugh on top of that.
No, you're right. You're right in that way. And of course, we know that making people laugh when you're actually there in situ is very hard in front of an audience.
Sometimes it's hard. If they don't like you, it's hard to turn people's opinions. If they're already on board and they like you, then you just need to be yourself.
Yes.
But if you're actually working for it, then that can be hard.
Yeah.
And I just know that whenever I had a dramatic scene, it was always just kind of like, oh, it's quite nice to do something that's not. But then I hear stories about people on the sets of dramas.
Well, they're a bit arsehole.
And it sounds fucking awful.
What, actors?
Actors like on the set of like Prime Suspect or something like that, and the crew are just like, oh, it's not like that on a drama. It's not like this on a drama. People are very quiet and they're concentrating all day, and you know, you're doing a scene where you're doing an autopsy in a morgue, and people are trying to get their heads around, like going, well, if I was in a morgue doing an autopsy, I'd probably be feeling like this. And you go, what? In a comedy, you know, I've got piss all over my trousers. I'm not like going, right, how would I feel if I'd actually piss? You just like action. Oh, no, I've got piss all over my trousers.
I want to see you doing
what I mean?
A comedy autopsy in a morgue, though. That'd be good.
Well, like I'd have to get in the mic. I don't know what I'd be able to find funny about, I'm afraid.
Oh. Different things, funny things that come out of the body when you chop it open?
Oh. Have you seen the Baywatch reboot?
No, I'd see.
Is that what happens?
Yeah, there's a whole scene. It's tonally all over the place. It's kind of like, there's a whole scene in the morgue where they're playing with a dead man's penis. And you just go... But it's kind of like, it's also in the same film where they're like going, drugs are bad, guys.
Right, wow.
It's just such a weird film. I hated it.
It was quite popular, wasn't it?
The Rock...
Oh, yeah, he's popular.
He's popular. He produced it. I thought it was an awful film, but I think it's probably because I hold the source material very close to my heart. Not just close to my heart. But...
oh, God. Anyway, yeah, I think... comedy is harder. And... drama's easy.
But is it? Are you taking it all very seriously when you're doing it?
Yeah.
Or is it all? Does it feel like? Yeah, a bit.
Well, there's a responsibility, isn't there? I felt like you've got to do a good job, haven't you? And I was a bit nervous about doing drama, about being a depressed man. I felt like I had to rein my face in because naturally I'd be quite big and sort of clowny. Usually in things, I mean, not everything, but quite on stage at least. And then for this, you have to really feel like I have to rein my face in.
Did you have any methods for getting into character? Because I know when I did a couple of short films before I did any TV, and I was so awful in the short films. I was doing so much acting. And when I did the Uncle Pilot, which was only the other week, I watched the Michael Caine acting thing.
Yes, okay.
And it helped me get in the right mindset to, like, not do anything.
Yes.
And there's that Clint Eastwood quote, which is always really good, which is, he goes, "Don't just do something, stand there." I think that's really good.
Yeah. I didn't look at loads of stuff, but I worked with Gareth, director, quite a lot. And he always used to say, "Tell it with your eyes." Rich.
And how did that work as advice?
I'm just trying to tell it with my eyes right
I
now.
I think that's too much.
That's good. No, I think that's just right. You've got to imagine that you're not just going to be watching him face to face. There's going to be like a camera in the way.
Camera there.
Right, okay.
So you've got to...
Yeah.
You've got to imagine the camera's not there.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of the time, because I'm filming Reluctant Landlord. You were in the Reluctant Landlord last year, weren't you?
I was, did a little bit.
That was a nice day when you came in. We were mopping up all of the scenes at the end, and so we were normally what would happen is we were called in and we'd be there at 8, and then we'd be filming till 6. But when you were in, we were on location.
Yes.
And they'd call us in, but there'd be a lot of sitting around in the green room. So that was nice.
It was a lovely shoot, and David, Romesh is obviously lovely, but I know David as well, the director, and he's great, isn't he?
Yeah, well, we're getting on really well this series.
Are you doing it right now?
Yeah, we're doing it at the moment. Anyway, so I just know that I'll do a lot of acting with my eyes, and David will come over to me and he'll say, we just need something more. And I'll say to him, "Did you watch it through the monitors?" And he'll say, "No, I didn't." And I said, "Trust me, you've got what you need." And...
are you basically directing it?
I don't want to say.
Okay.
I don't want to say that, but... Okay. I'm just going to put my microphone on mute. Yes. Oh, sorry. Is it that button? Oh, fuck. So there's that. But also sometimes my performance will be so good, he'll ask me to do it like 32 times.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
Just in case people don't see it the first time.
Yeah. Just in case. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Because he doesn't want to risk the fact that he hasn't captured it on camera.
Yeah.
And he'll say, "Do it again." But, you know, I'll go, "Fucking hell, I'm flattered." Yeah. The other actors are getting a bit jealous and angry with me because they're just thinking...
How many have you done, Romesh?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Romesh. I mean, his performance is so lackluster. Sometimes he'll only have to do it once. I said, just the once from you, Rom, but another couple of dozen times from Nick. I'll be, this is how you do it, Rom. Obviously, I'm more experienced than him. But do you find it like. Because we were filming a scene the other day where we had to be. And we were just sort of. I don't know. I think that it's probably because it's a sitcom. But the tone on set is very light and silly, and then you do. But I think it was like that when we were doing the more dramatic stuff in Uncle as well.
Oh, well, I think in the goal when it's not when the camera's not rolling, everyone's laughing. It's not true, but sort of there's a lighter thing, and because it's quite heavy, and I'm sure that's true of lots of stuff. You've got to have some sort of lightness.
Do you think, because you come from a comedy background, do you think you have less of the sort of idea of that craft, like Nick was talking about dramas and everyone taking themselves very seriously?
I didn't really have a clue.
But maybe that is the way to do it, that actually there's no need to act like you're taking it very seriously. You can just turn it on and off and it'll be fine.
I tell you what, in the group, it is sort of like a minimal, stripped-down sort of thing, performance that I do, which is what Gareth wanted, but I was always very self-conscious that I hadn't done enough.
I think that was
coming from a comedy
sort of background. You've done just enough.
But some people criticised it for that, saying he doesn't really do anything.
I watched a film called The Oxford Murders, or The Oxford Mystery, The Oxford Murders, starring John Hurt and Elijah Wood. And that is an example of, you're doing too much. It's too much. Yeah. Like, the acting, the script was terrible, but the acting was just, it was mind-boggling how much acting was going on. And it just, every scene was, I mean, I wanted to watch kind of like an old-fashioned kind of murder mystery type thing. And it was on my Skybox. So I watched it. I thought, this will be nice Sunday night viewing. And it was just awful. It was so much, such a chore to get through, to the point that I got halfway through it and fell asleep, and I tried to watch it again, but I kept forgetting what part I'd got to, and I would re-watch the same middle 20-minute part where I couldn't remember anything until it got to a point where I was like, oh no, I have watched this! And then it happened three times, and then eventually I finished it off last night, and oh my God.
That is quite persistent, though. I don't think I'd have lasted.
I'm doing this fucking thing where
you
I
don't have to do it.
I'm doing this fucking thing where I write down what films I've seen, and I can't watch half a film. I've got to finish the film.
Right.
It's OCD.
What, have you made him do it?
Well, no, I did it, so he's done it as well.
I see.
But
I
you
see.
Can just not watch it if you get bored.
No, I've got to watch
can't
it.
Can't you just say, watch, this was shit?
Yeah, you could just not watch that
no,
one.
No, you can't count it as a full watch.
I see.
But you don't have to. You just disregard it.
There are loads
disregard
of films
it.
That get good in the last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
No, I can't think
I'm
of any.
Sure.
Can't think of one.
No.
I was thinking the first time I saw you on anything, Tom, yes. was on Blunder on
Blunder.
Channel 4.
Okay.
And that you
talking.
Played like a kung fu expert.
Mm-hmm.
Who would be doing high kicks and yes. then revealing your balls?
Yes.
What was
and
Blunder?
It was, and that's the thing that always made me laugh.
Yeah. He was called Karate Johnson.
Karate Johnson. But it was always funny, and it always felt like, are you allowed to show someone's balls on telly?
What was Blunder?
It was like a sketch show. It was
on
a really,
what channel?
Channel 4.
Channel 4.
Who else was in it?
So Simon Farnaby was in it, mm-hmm. and David Mitchell. Was in it.
Oh, yeah.
It was quite a sort of an unusual collaboration. Rhys Thomas, Tony Way, and Nina Conti.
Oh yeah, it was, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was a sort of manufactured sketch show in some ways. I was working with Simon, and Rhys Thomas was working with Tony Way quite a lot, and they got brought together and put together to do it. So as a result, it didn't quite work.
Sure.
But I had some great moments.
But
in
like
it.
Tony Way is all part of that.
Oh,
lot. I
yeah,
mean,
yeah,
you're
exactly.
a whole generation.
I know, it all crosses over.
Mm. And also in Tank 432, Michael Smiley's in it, and
Smiley.
He was in Spaced, and Tony Way was in Spaced, and
yeah.
It's kind of like there's this whole generation of.
Yeah.
Comedians that all sort of work together and are all interlinked.
In fact, on The Ghoul, we did a special sort of additional feature thing for the DVD release, and we did a little mini documentary, not documentary, that's way too strong, Talking Heads, about how it all links up, and it's all to do with Ealing Live and like the composers, Wayne Shepherd, who you might have met on the circuit, who used to do Gary Lestrange character.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, he got...
Gary Lestrange, he did Stella Cellar.
Yeah, of course. He bollocked me. Did he?
Yeah.
Right.
Stella had a habit of switching off the microphone when she left the stage. And I was in the sound booth and I had no access to the stage or the microphone.
Oh my God, I'm remembering it all now. That so, little sound booth that was there.
Yeah, so Gary Lestrange was on stage.
What
he came
venue
out.
Was it?
It's Barcode. It's a gay bar in Soho, which isn't called Barcode anymore. It's called something else. But it's in that street that goes down to the Lyric Pub.
Near the windmill.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah.
And Gary Lestrange went on. Stella did her bit, switched off the microphone, fucked off. Gary Lestrange came on, I set his track up, pressed play, he went on, started singing into the microphone, nothing's coming out of the microphone, he's going, for fuck's sake, what's the point in doing a fucking sound check? Fucking hell. What, and I'm just there going, I can't do anything about it, it's Stella. Stella switched the microphone, there's a button on the side, flip it. He's saying, I restarted it for him, but his big entrance was ruined.
Right.
He can sleep well knowing that there was only four people in. So after 3 hours of flying.
Oh my God.
I mean.
Oh God. Desperation of all that. Jesus.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
But so, anyway, so he did the music on The Ghoul.
He did the music on The Ghoul, yeah. He's brilliant. He also did Murder in Successville, the music for that.
Right, wow.
Yeah, yeah, Tom Davis's show. So he's become...
And were you on that?
I did do a little bit on that.
Who were you on that?
Richard Hammond.
I can see that, yeah.
I absolutely loved it. Although, of course, I couldn't stop laughing with Tom, because Tom was obviously much bigger than me, two different sized Toms, and he sort of grabbed my lapels and was sort of going, "Listen, Hammond," and I couldn't keep a straight face. But anyway, that was lovely. Yeah,
we should play you a song. What's your song that you've got?
Well, I gave you a couple. I don't know what.
Okay, fine. I'll just play it.
Yeah, okay.
Singing through you kill me. Thunderbolts caught easily. Shouts the truth peacefully.
We're back. We're joined in the studio by Tom Meaton. I don't know why I'm saying, and we're joined in the studio by Tom Meaton. If you're tuning in now, you'll never make it out alive. Here's a question for you. Who played the title role in the 2015 movie Magic Mike XXL?
What's his face? Tatum.
Yeah.
Yeah, him. What's his name?
Is it A, Channing Tatum?
Yes.
Is it B, Matt Damon? Is it C, Ryan Gosling? Or is it D, Leonardo DiCaprio?
A,
yeah, that's right.
That's good. What's that movie called?
Oh, it's nice. An Italian accent.
What?
Italian. Leonardo DiCaprio.
Hey.
My favourite movie is Mamma Mia. That's a tannin for you.
Yeah.
I don't think 2019.
So when you're talking about that group of people that you belong to,
yes,
where would you have met all those people?
When you're talking about that group of people, who's the worst? Who's the biggest shit?
Steve Oren. No, I always, Steve's my default be rude to, because I'm allowed to be rude to him.
Where did you start? When did you meet Steve?
Well, we were both doing sort of quite odd characters individually on the circuit, and this sort of Uber agent called Neil Willis, who had set up...
He sounds like an agent.
Yeah.
Neil Willis.
He sounds like he is the agent of an Uber driver.
Neil Willis from Peckham. Well, he was a Brummie, actually. Welcome to paradise. No, he didn't ever say that. But he had a sketch group with Mackenzie Crook, Ian Lee, Mitch Benn, and a guy called Zeren Gibson, who used to do a character called Valentine Fly Guy. And they had a sketch group, and then they all left and went... They had a successful Edinburgh, they all left. So he recast it, and he put me and Steve in it as well.
As a double
weird, isn't it? No, with another guy.
That's where you met?
That's where we met. And then we got on really well, and we left the other two in the group. Sorry, boys. And we left Neil Willis.
It's a tale as old as time.
Yeah, it is, of course. But it wasn't, it wasn't quite right. Neil Willis since left to, I think, he went religious and moved to Spain.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ooh. So you were doing sketches and one man, like kind of character stuff, but on the stand-up circuit.
Yeah.
Well.
Can you give us a time frame when you were doing
it? I first started doing stuff in about 98. Mm. 98, I think. Yeah. Yeah, about then I started. I had a character called Tommy Fate. And it wasn't particularly well thought through, but it was a lot of fun.
But at that point, you're just trying stuff out, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. I used to have a disco track to come on to and do some disco moves.
I would say that one of the other things that I remember a lot and that I talk about to people is this guy called Tom Meaton, and he used to do this song called Northampton. And did you ever record it?
I didn't, but you know what? And I can't remember if I told you this, don't want to ruin it, but you know who actually wrote that? Wayne Shepherd. Goes back to Wayne Shepherd. Wayne Shepherd. So I'm from Northampton,
yeah.
And I tried an hour show about Northampton, a comedy show, and Wayne wrote me the song.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's one of the funniest...
It's a good song.
Funniest lyrics.
Yeah.
Is the can you do it?
Oh, man,
give me a...
Oh,
give me an N. Give me an O, give me an R, give me a T, give me an H, give me an A, give me an M, give me a P, give me a T, give me an O. What have you got, Northampton?
That's Wayne, I can't even take credit for it. It's a genius of Wayne.
Yeah.
It's a good song.
Yeah.
I think it always makes me think that the stand-up circuit in 1998, late 90s, was much, but also much more...
Experimental.
Like, yeah.
It was.
I think
what's...
Because I found it quite narrow starting, and it felt like almost that... As soon as you're doing something even remotely, 2007.
Right.
That by then, then it felt like, if you're doing anything remotely unusual, people would be like, oh, I don't know about this. It's like, it's not even that weird. It's not even that...
I always felt that about my act. I always thought, if anything, I'm mainstream.
Yeah.
People are laughing, and it's audience participation, and you're going on, and you're being silly. It's clearly a joke. And then what you don't realise is everyone's going, you're very angry. And you go, well, I'm not, am I?
Yeah.
It's an act, isn't it? It's an act, right? I'm not like...
But a lot of it's down to the rise of the sort of re-rise, if you like, risen again.
Well, I reckon
of the observational sort of comic and the power comic, isn't it?
Like the Apollo would have started about 2001, 2002, when Jet D took it over. And then it was like, oh, that's a legitimate career, is it?
Yeah.
But the weird stuff wasn't the stuff that was going on. It was by that point, it was the observational stuff, which was alternative comedy in the late 80s and 90s. Then it became like mainstream comedy.
Yeah.
And then that was just like, right, well, the mainstream comedy is the stand-up observational stuff. stuff. Yes. And then the weird stuff was like pushed out on the fringes. And then when it was just like, actually, you can make a career out of it. If you play your cards right, you can be on Live at the Apollo. And when Live at the Apollo started, you're on Live at the Apollo on a Thursday night, and by the weekend, you were
selling out.
Yeah, you were,
yeah. And then you've got panel shows and it all just interlinks, doesn't it? It would change
your career overnight, Live at the Apollo.
I can understand it. But I think that's when you're saying like this sort of group of us, this amorphous group who all sort of work together and da da da. I think we're all united in that we all used to do weird things on stage. That is a sort of common thing with this sort of group. Really ever tried to do stand up in its pure sense.
I think when me and Nat started, which was about 2007, the whole idea of kind of making a career out of it was just like, do you know what? If you do this, and this. It was more mapped out, I think, by that point, and it was less like flinging shit at the wall, and like trying, you know, the days of trying something different out every weekend were gone, and it was like get your tight 20, get it on telly, and it's kind of
It's a shame you can't have both, isn't it? As you know, the variety, because that's what the best nights were usually. They were sort of a mixture.
It still exists.
Yeah,
but I think that you need the right audience, because people are now conditioned to be like, well, this is what live comedy is.
Yeah. Mm.
And when you have like a weirder act, people are going, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
What the fuck is this? I was on a lineup with, this was maybe the worst gig I ever had, I was on a lineup with Milton Jones and Josh Widdicombe. Josh was comparing and Milton Jones was headlining, and it was for a corporate gig for a bank. And they said, we want you, Nick. They phoned up and they said, well, we've been recommended you, we want you. I said, you want me for a corporate gig for a bank? And they were like, well, it's a big night out. So who else have you got? Milton Jones, Josh Whitaker. I was like, well, I think it's odd that you want me. Well, are you sure you want me? And they're like, yeah, we want you. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I'll send you some clips. And I sent them some YouTube clips. And I said, just watch that. And then, you know, and so they watched it. And I said, we want you. Okay, if you're sure, okay, well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do this, and this. Okay. I got there. It took ages to get there. It was, like, up north somewhere. It took a really long time to get there. Got there. Got out of the car. Josh had been doing radio at the time, so the guy that picked us up ignored me altogether and just talked to Josh about how much he loved Josh. And you go, yeah. Not the sitcom Josh. It was before the sitcom Josh. He was talking to Josh about how much he loved Josh.
Right.
And it was kind of like, I was sat in the car going, I think I'm in a wrong booking here. And then I got on stage and I just filmed a pilot for Heavy Entertainment. So basically I did everything that I could do from the pilot of Heavy Entertainment as a stage act, which included wearing a white suit that tore away. And I was wearing sort of like brown wire fronts underneath and cowboy boots.
Lovely.
And I did a poem and two songs and some one-liners with sound effects and all. You know, I did like my whole show in 15 minutes. And we did a run through and the crew sort of enjoyed it. And then, you know, Josh goes on, compares. Fucking people, every time he gets to a punchline, they're all groaning. I think we were meant to go on at 8 and they'd gone out and got hammered, and we ended up going on at 11. And they were so drunk by that point. But they were so, and Josh was kind of like doing his mainstream stuff. And they were like groaning at his one. I was just thinking, oh, I'm not sure about this. The only thing that I think is going to get me through this is chutzpah, right?
Yeah.
So I go out, and it went so badly. They hated me so much. They hated me so much. They were shouting, going, whoa, whoa. And for some reason, they printed out our reviews and given them out as kind of like, this is who's going to be on. And he was like, oh, 4 stars, 4, I wouldn't even give you one. And it was just like, and I was just there doing the thing. And there was one point I remember having an out-of-body experience, and I was just about to do my tear-away trousers and get down to my pants, right? And I was thinking, maybe this will get them on side.
I've had those thoughts, though.
And I did it, and the guy went, you're disgusting! You're disgusting! You're disgusting! But like, I'm not even joking, but like he was like a boiling pot, and he was like, and he got up and he ran off, right? And I was like, I don't know what to do. So I followed him off the stage, and then I came back on. And I came off, and the people that organised it sent me to my room. And I got my stuff and I got dressed and everything, and I came back out to watch Josh and Milton, and they said, and here's the guy that's going to take you home. And I went back and sat with the guy that was going to take me home in the car, and I was like, oh. And then And then he goes, and I came back out, and I was just like, to watch Josh, and Milton goes, I don't think you understand, sir. We're very angry with you, and we don't want to see you.
What?
And I was like, what? I did my act. The one that he booked, I can't help it that they didn't like it. And then they said, we're very angry. So I had to sit in the car.
Oh, my God.
And wait for Josh, who was my friend. And I had to wait for Josh in the car. Josh sat in the car. We drove home for 4 hours. Josh was very tired. I told him what happened. He didn't care. Anyway, that was a terrible gig. Sorry, that's taken up most of the time. I'm pretty sure it's in Northampton, though, to bring it back. That's Fan Club. We've got to play a game with you now, Tom.
Okay, good.
This game is better or worse, where you have to say whether the next person is better or worse than the person before, based entirely on my own opinion.
Right.
Starting with Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys. Laura Linney, the actress Laura Linney, is she better or worse than Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys?
Worse.
She is worse. She's a high card.
She's in Congo.
She's great. Yeah.
She's in Congo.
Dennis Quaid, better or worse than Laura Linney?
Better.
I might go worse.
Really?
They're both high cards.
I like Dennis Quaid. He's like a poor man's Harrison Ford.
Sure. Timothy Dalton, better or worse than Dennis Quaid?
Worse. No. What did I see with Timothy Dalton in recently?
James Flash Gordon?
No, it wasn't either of those things.
Oh, Flash Gordon. I got better.
Better. It is better.
Flash Gordon, good call.
Tim Curry, better or worse than Timothy Dalton?
Better.
I'm going to say worse.
Why?
Don't know. Tim Henman, better or worse than Tim Curry?
Worse.
Tim Curry's worse than Timothy Dalton?
Yeah. Susan Sarandon.
You're just doing Tim's, mate.
I was just doing Tim's. Susan Sarandon, better or worse than Tim Henman?
Better.
Yeah, she is, yeah.
Cool.
Dame Maggie Smith, better or worse than Susan Sarandon?
Worse.
Ooh. Wow.
Although they could play the same character at different ends of the spectrum. Well, not different.
She is worse, I think. Yeah, sure. Worse. High cards. Willem Dafoe, better or worse than Dame Maggie Smith?
Better.
Better, he is better.
Willem Dafoe's better than Maggie? Yes.
Walter Matthau, better or worse than Willem Dafoe?
Better. Whoa. Better.
But I really like William Dafoe.
Yeah, me too.
But who doesn't like Walter Matthau?
I know, but
grumpier old men.
I know, but I really like William
Dafoe.
It's
up there with The Godfather too, isn't it?
Walter
Matthau, waste of time.
Is better. He
okay,
is better.
Okay. Walter Matthau good, is better.
He is better.
Was that it?
That's it.
That's Fan Club.
Okay.
Five.
Five, got five. Okay, you join John Niven. No, you don't. Sorry. You don't join John Niven and Sean Harris. They got 10, mate. You're in the
you
five
didn't even
group.
Ask me 10.
You're there with Yasmin Akram. You with Yasmin Akram, Rob Deering, and Jerry Page with five.
Okay. Well, slightly disappointed.
You're not as good as John Niven, Sean Harris with 10, Daniel with 10, Michael Legg, Solomon Gray, Rebecca Staten with 9, Claudia Blakely, Jordan Brooks, Suze Kempner. I mean, I really would like to ask you some more questions. We've only got like one more minute.
Okay.
Unfortunately, rules are rules. 8, Claudia Blakely, Jordan Brooks, Suze Kempner, Evelyn Mark, Paul F. Taylor, Rebecca Schwartz, Mark Smith, and Carl Theobald with 8, Taylor Campbell, Greg Olsen, Tom Goodman, Charlie Exon, Matthew Holness, Jim Hosking, Lauren X, Esther Smith, Ian Smith, Elliot Spellagan, Josh Finnegan, Sean McLaughlin, John Williams, Oliver Grant, Dylan Glenn, George, Colin Hall, Tanner Gidler, Barry Lowen, Lindsay Water, John Robbins, Richard Stanley, Miles Simmons, and David Trent. Not as good as them, mate. But you are better than Jack Barry, Buddy Galore, Taylor Glenn, Katie Wilkins, and Sam Ashurst. That's a year's worth of guests, and sometimes we had two. Okay. In Magical Avenue on.
Oh, lovely.
How did you find it?
I know, that's flown by.
We didn't even talk about what you're a fan of. You're a fan of the books, The Sister Brothers.
We didn't end up talking.
I'm pleased we didn't
talk about it. It's a good book. I love the book.
You like the book?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, it's really good.
You're a fan of the film Together, a film by Lucas Moodyson.
Yeah,
have you seen it?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, you watch it.
Russian Doll TV series. You love Rose Garlic. Oh, man, I could have talked to you the whole fucking hour about Rose Garlic. Chess, the game, not the musical. And then Chess, the musical, not the game. Weird. Okay. You could have just saved us all time there. Birds with Wings of By God.
Yep. Or a false. Yes.
You don't have to concentrate on any of that. I'm glad we didn't talk about any of that.
Okay. Oh, no.
It's just lovely shooting.
It would have been.
Are you looking forward to the film, The Sister Brothers?
Yes.
Yes.
It would probably be disappointing.
Very good casting, though, I think.
I know, really good.
And we're gonna finish on your favourite song.
Oh, okay.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.